Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress.
It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hello and welcome to the Randomly Generated History Club, where three non-historians pick a year at random and try to learn things about it. I'm Will, and I'm here with my two friends, Ant and Anna.
Hello.
Hello.
This week we are talking about the year 910 BCE, and I'd like each of us to give our three-word preview of what we're discussing today. Ant.
Sketchy Bible King.
Sketchy Bible King. Very good. Anna.
Big stone heads.
Big stone heads?
Stoner heads?
Stone heads.
Okay.
Big stone heads.
Big stone heads.
Oh, I think I might know what that is, potentially. That's exciting. And mine is fascists in miniskirts. There we are.
Please stop looking at my browser history.
Oh, amazing.
Here we go. Onwards to 910 BCE. Okay, this week I am going to be talking about Sparta and the Spartan people.
In 910?
It turns out
that
Sparta was founded in about 910 BCE.
That is insane. I did not know that.
And it, well...
or maybe not.
Caveats ahoy.
Founded, right? But... you know, we're going to go with it. So the first thing to know about Sparta is that it wasn't really called that at all. So the city-state that we know as Sparta was actually called Lacedaemon. And
because there's no daemons there.
Nary a mat to be found.
And Sparta was the main settlement in that area. But at the time, people would have referred to the city-state, as the political entity, as Lacedaemon rather than Sparta. And then much later on, about 650 BCE, which is what, 250 years, 260
Jesus, you've
years
already
later.
Skipped forward.
Oh, we're skipping all
years.
Over the place.
Yeah, okay, great.
That was my jumping off point. We're going on a real journey. It then became the dominant military land power in Greece, in mainland Greece. And as a result of that dominance, it was then the leading force in unifying Greece when the Persians invaded. And then even later still, in about 431 to 404 BCE, it then went to war with and beat Athens in the Peloponnesian War. And although it then eventually lost a lot of its power, it then had a bit of a resurgence under the Roman conquest, which then happened another few hundred years after that. And it wasn't until the Visigoths came in 396 AD and sacked Sparta that it really...
Was that late?
Yeah, that late. Wow. Exactly, yeah. So it had about like a 1300-year run. Which is pretty good. Yeah, exactly.
That's about as long as you've been running, right?
It's, yeah, about... Yeah. Like, about
half the length of this podcast is going to be if we do all the years.
That's right.
So today, it is a centre for processing citrus fruit and olives.
But the toughest citrus fruit and olives, right?
No, yeah. Not really. And Sparta has a pretty fascinating bunch of things about its unique social system that is worth exploring. And its constitution and laws were all configured to maximize military proficiency at expense of basically absolutely everything else and at really any cost. So it had every single social institution was geared around providing military training and physical development for basically its men. Who
lots of CrossFit gyms.
They're so into CrossFit.
Oh my God, so many ropes. Yeah.
Creatine consumption was at an all-time high.
That's what they were really processing, all their kidney stones.
And the inhabitants of Sparta, much like CrossFit, were divided up into different groups. You had the Spartiates, who were the...
Sorry, that's great. Spartiate.
Are you mocking the Spartiates?
No, that's how we call each other.
I see. So they were citizens with full rights, and they were people who would be able to claim a pure bloodline to their ancestors
to other people.
I can declare.
I have a very pure bloodline to my ancestors.
Yeah, direct line. Yeah, direct descendant of my ancestors.
Yeah, are you? That's really impressive.
Spartiate me, please.
But critically, those ancestors must have been solely within Sparta set number of generations. Okay. And then the Mothicae, who were the
descendants of moths.
The weird moth people.
Who were the weird moth people?
Left them out of the movies, didn't they?
They were the air support in the battle.
Yeah. And the Mothicae would circle around flames and flap in a confused fashion. They were the free non-Spartiate people who descended from Spartans. So they weren't citizens with full rights. They hadn't gone through a bunch of processes we'll talk about in a moment to gain those full rights, but they were still purebloods. And then there were the Perioikoi, who were the free non-Spartiate people. So these are still Greeks, but they can't claim any heritage.
Yeah. Are they full free or half-fat?
They are they're fully skimmed,
half and half,
fully skimmed. Yeah,
oh, wow.
Fully free.
Can you say them again, please?
Yeah, the Perioikoi, and then the Helots were the state-owned enslaved non-Spartan locals.
Okay,
so they're your slaves, basically.
I feel we're going to need like a table of Spartan, non-Spartan, free, non-free, and then put people in those boxes.
Yeah, and the whole thing that runs through all this basically is how pure is your blood.
Yeah,
and so
that's never caused problems.
Caused any problems at all. So Spartiate men underwent the rigorous agogi training regimen, and
it's like a Korean beef dish.
Yeah, it's mostly zumba, I think.
How much beef can you eat in a 30-minute period? So it was like an intense training regimen of physical training and military training, but it was something every single person in this social class would undergo, and they would do that so they could fight in the military, and then with that came full rights as a citizen.
Cool.
And the Spartan phalanxes that resulted in were considered, unsurprisingly, to be amongst the best in battle because they'd geared their whole society around being good in battle. And interestingly, Spartan women also enjoyed considerably more rights than elsewhere in classical antiquity.
Oh,
but that's like. Yeah. Not saying that much.
Yeah, not that much, right. Yeah,
Which is to say, minimal.
Yeah, exactly.
But not none.
They were allowed to speak behind closed doors.
Whoa,
or something.
Don't go crazy.
But it's not just us today who are interested in Sparta. They were actually the subject of fascination by other people, even at the time, such was their unique culture. And
that's right. 300 is so called because it is the 300th version of that movie, right?
Yeah, pretty much.
They've been making it for ages.
Yeah, exactly. And I can't deal with this without dealing with the film 300 in all its glory. And this is basically referred to a battle that took place about 430 years after the period we're supposed to be focusing on. But...
Okay. Well, you're still you still haven't hit the record.
Yeah, I'm not yet.
I'm. What's this about 0.4 of an ant time unit? So there was a small force led by King Leonidas, and he had about 300 Spartans with him, but he also had about 700 thespians to
just actors.
To just like
to mime,
to bring the melodrama, do like improv scenes.
Exactly right. Okay. Yeah. So the Spartans were very well prepared and had been preparing for this scene their whole life.
Yeah.
And the thespians were just, as you say, improving their way through it.
I need a suggestion. What's something we could kill Xerxes with?
And then they also had about 400 Thebans.
Huh. I have no funny commentary there.
No funny comments there for the Thebans. And they made a legendary last stand, much actually like depicted was depicted in the film to some degree, at the Battle of Thermopylae against this massive Persian army led by Xerxes. And the Spartans had managed to get themselves in position because they'd got some advance warning of the invasion. And then about a year later, they then assembled their full Spartan force, which was really the most pure expression of like Spartan military prowess that's ever occurred. And they won a complete and overwhelming military victory against the Persians, forcing them to end their invasion.
That must be the plot of 302?
I think there is a sequel. It probably is the plot.
I've not seen it because, you know.
So it was, as we've already said, it was kind of fascinating the way they governed themselves. They had an oligarchy, which in this instance means that the state was ruled by two hereditary kings. So they had two families, and they balanced each other's power against each other. So they were sort of holding each other in check. And after the Persian invasion, the power of those families actually ended up steadily declining a little bit. But basically, they had this hereditary principle, and that hereditary principle permeated everything else in society. So as we were saying about the bloodlines, this was a really critical part of the way that they ran their society. And if you couldn't show pure Spartan blood, you had fewer rights. So despite being very cool, they were basically a military fascist state. And by modern standards, they'd be in completely uncool. Basically the most appalling place.
But their abs.
Wonderful muscle tone.
Yeah, exactly.
There is a sequel, by the way. It's called 300 Rise of an Empire.
Uh-huh.
And it stars your favorite Bond girl.
Which one?
Eva Green.
Eva Green. Oh, no way.
I must watch
this. Wait, no, wasn't Eva Green in the first one as well?
I don't think so. Am I just looking at the first one?
I think you're looking at the first one. Isn't Eva Green in the first one?
What's his face isn't in it?
No, Eva Green's in the first one.
No, I don't think she is.
Is she not?
That's the kind of thing I'd remember.
Yeah, no, it's. I think you're thinking of Lena Headey.
Yeah, I am. Yeah, sorry.
Who's in both of them.
Yeah.
Great.
End of section.
End of section. That, Will, was such an insightful look into the year 910 BC.
Yeah, you will learn so much about that specific year.
I feel like I know so much about that that time period now.
Thank you. I'm doing a history podcast.
I shall contribute to the facts that happened definitely in 910.
Great.
BCE. This is probably actually going to contain the least amount of historical fact of any of the episodes that I have ever done.
Okay.
But I promise I will not mispronounce a single word.
Oh, you've made that promise before.
Yeah,
we've been burnt.
And the key source for this information is a book. It's a pretty good book, actually. You might even say it's a great book.
Oh, no.
Here we go.
It is, of course, the greatest
Harry
book of all
Potter
time.
Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban.
Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban. No, the Bible.
Yay! Oh.
Specifically, 12 verses within the Old Testament. Or I guess just the regular Testament, if you don't believe in the New Testament.
Yeah.
Kings 1, which is about the kings of Israel. And specifically in this one, we're going to talk about a chap that definitely maybe did exist, maybe called King Omri.
Omri.
O-M-R-I.
Oh.
So King Omri.
O-M-R-I.
Yeah, O-M-R-I. He was born in 1910 BCE. 910 BCE.
We're in a constant state of anxiety.
I know. I'm so tense right now.
No, he was born in 910 BCE.
Okay.
Roughly, approximately, maybe. He might not be real.
Okay.
We're going to talk about this.
If he was real, he was born in 910.
Ish.
Great.
Yeah. Ish. We don't know.
When you were out by one ant time unit, you said the words, I am definitely dealing with... What I'm about to say definitely happened in the year 547 BCE. So,
yeah.
But this definitely happened in 910 BCE,
it
right?
It definitely maybe didn't happen, but if it did, then this is when it would have definitely maybe happened-ish, give or take.
That, it couldn't be clearer.
Yeah, So just to give you a bit of context around this time, we're talking about Israel or modern-day Israel, and at the time it was split into two. In the north, you had Israel, and in the south, you had the kingdom of Judah.
Mm-hmm.
So there were two different parts of Israel then at the time. And the legend of Omri goes something like, there was a king of Israel in the north, the northern kingdom, called King Ula. And Omri was the commander of the armies, and he had a rival, Zimri, who was commander of half the chariots.
Okay.
It's not
the right half or the left half.
It's not clear if it's like just half of every chariot or just half the total number of chariots. It's actually not clear. So Zimri, he assassinates King Ula, spelled E-U-L-A, probably because he kept insisting that everyone sign up to arduous terms of references for use of their data. That's for my GDPR nerds out there. I know they're out there.
God, anyway, I hope so.
Anyway, Zimri takes the title of king, and he lasts as king for 7 whole days before word gets out to the armies that are controlled by Omri. And Omri then goes about and sieges the city. And so Zimri decides to do the only noble thing that he can do. Well, he doesn't do the most noble thing, which would be face him in battle. He decides to lock the doors to the palace and set on fire with himself inside it.
What?
Omri did that?
No, Zimri.
Zimri
kills himself by burning down the palace.
Hang on, this sounds like a very unlikely thing. Are you sure the other people didn't lock him in and burn the place down?
This is potentially true.
That seems more likely.
Look, you want to take it up with the Bible? You go right ahead, okay? We're going to talk about some other historical...
Your complaints have been lodged.
we're going to take this up with some other historical...
What is the process for getting edits?
I think just nail them to a door of a church somewhere,
yeah,
and eventually.
That's worked really well, in fact. Okay, you could also attempt to become Pope.
Yeah, that's true. That is true. Or have a diet, as in like a council of bishops.
Okay.
All right, you could do all those things. Anyway, Omri takes the throne, and he suppressed a would-be king along the way, but he then actually solidifies power, and he instigates the Omri dynasty of rule for a few generations. Mm. It was lasting and peaceful, and it actually ended about 50 years of civil war and conflict fighting over this throne of Israel.
Omripotent.
Nice, I like that.
Thanks.
So he definitely maybe totally sort of, okay, potentially ruled for 12 years from 885 to 874 BCE. And he also, in his time, set up the capital of Samaria. So the city of Samaria is founded when he decides to found it, and it becomes the capital of Israel. The capital of Judah was always...
Jerusalem?
Jerusalem, that's the one, yeah. But the capital of the north was changed, and then it became Samaria from then on. And that's where the name the Samarians come from as well.
Samaritans?
Samarians. So Samarian people.
Different ones, okay.
Not the Samaritans, the people that do good things.
Yeah.
But according to the Bible, though, he was an evil king. He walked in the ways of Jeroboam and angered God by the use of idols.
You can't do that.
How do you use it? What was he using him for?
What by the use of idols?
Little plays.
Yeah.
Stage, yeah, little, right? Yeah.
Puppeteering,
theater shows.
Doorstops.
Yeah.
Paperweights. Just all the kind of basic idol things. So while the Bible might be somewhat questionable source in some ways, because it's only 12 verses on this, so of course, it's backed up in two other places as well. So this sort of historical account of Omri is potentially maybe being real, which is the Black Obelisk of Shalmaneser III and the Mesha Stele of the Moabites.
Wow.
So they're obviously not kept in their home countries. They're kept in the British Museum and the Louvre. Obviously, why would they be in their home countries? Yeah. The Black Obelisk is a large obelisk that's black.
What color is it?
Black. Okay. And it's a testament to the Syrian ruler Shalmaneser III, and bears inscriptions about his conquests and how everyone kowtows to him, etc., including a mention of the Omri dynasty king, a descendant of King Omri, who was bowing down.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices
down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promoting for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do it. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
Mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
And swearing allegiance to the Syrians.
Hmm.
So... not specifically mentioned in Omri, but the Omri dynasty.
That seems pretty legit.
And so this was made after, like, yes, well after his
well
rule,
after, well after
telling the history of what happened.
About 3 years later or something like that.
Yeah.
And then the Mesha stele is a large inscribed stone slate, so a black stone slate. A stele in this concept is just a large slate. Yeah. And it is inscribed in Canaanite inscriptions depicting King Mesha of Moab, which is modern-day Jordan, which also give reference to the house of Omri. So not a dynasty per se or an empire or a kingdom, but the house of Omri. So somewhat the same. I have a quote from the Mesha stele, if you like.
Yes, please.
It's real pithy. Now, as for Omri, king of Israel.
Who definitely existed.
Yeah, he oppressed Moab for many days because Chemosh was angry with his land and his son succeeded him. And he also said, I will oppress Moab. It was during my days that he said this.
Well, he was very clear in his intentions.
Yeah, it was, yeah.
That doesn't seem plausible.
That's what it says. It's not.
I think it seems, in fact, so plausible because it's just so. Yeah, it's just so matter of fact, right? It's not like, and then he hurled a lightning bolt. It's just like he oppressed a guy after he said, "I'm going to oppress."
But
that
it's
guy.
Like 2 11-year-olds have constructed an alibi for us. The theft of some sweets.
It was just idols in a trench coat.
I mean, the Mesha stele, the story of that itself is actually fascinating. I'm not going to go into too much detail, but like it was broken. There's bits missing.
Mm.
Part of the saving, how they have the inscriptions at all, is because someone took what's called a squeeze of it, which is that during there's some sort of theft and back and forth, someone got some papier-mâché and then stuck it on and ripped it off and then galloped off into the distance and they had the thing before it got smashed up.
Wow.
Yeah, so there's a whole thing there. But
squeeze.
A good squeeze.
Do people get squeezed these days?
Yeah, squeeze the whole time.
Do you? People just come up to you and take papier-mâché molds of you.
People and then run off. They're on the tube, they come up, they douse me with PVA glue and old newspapers. And it's really tedious, you know.
must be. You'd be like picking glue scabs off of you your whole life.
Yeah, for sure. And not just glue scabs either.
All manner
of scabs. God. Anyway, it's still debated to this day if a chap named Omri actually existed or if it's just like a dynastic lineage or a legendary figure that founded it.
Yeah.
You know, the Mesha stele, for example, might just also be an allegorical retelling of the verse in Kings, because there's a lot of analogues to what happens there.
Yeah.
Sort of reinforces itself rather than like core historic fact. So still up in the air, still not sure if he existed, not sure if it was 910 that he was born, all a bit vague.
What do you feel in your heart of hearts?
I think King Omri's real to me.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. He's real to me. I feel him in this room right now.
Yeah, I feel him too.
He's on represents.
So, you know, just good, solid history stuff.
Yeah. Absolutely. You nailed it history-wise. My three words were big stone heads. You guys think you know what it is
I thought I did.
You're probably right.
Is it Easter Island?
Oh, no.
That's what I was thinking, too.
Oh,
or
no.
The Rolling Stones.
No, Rapa Nui. Those are much later, actually.
Oh.
Yeah, I think around 1200.
Big stone heads? Oh, okay.
Yeah. These are other big stone heads.
It's not going to be Mount Rushmore at this stage.
Yes, it is.
Is it Egypt?
It's not Egypt.
Oh, wow.
Do you want to just keep guessing?
No, I think you should.
Is it Asia or Africa or Europe?
Nope.
No way.
No, I know.
Is it the Americas?
It is the Americas.
Go on, please.
Okay, I shall. I want to say I found a great map of the world in 1000 BCE, and most of it just says things like desert hunter-gatherers. So, like, there aren't even regions that have been named. But there is at least one civilization in the Americas that merited a capital letter. The Olmecs.
Oh. Okay, yes, I have heard of them.
O-L-M-E-C, the Olmecs, yep. I was going to say...
They make that book every year about the weather, right?
That's right, yeah.
The Olmec.
The Olmecs, yeah. No, I'll come on to that, yeah. I was going to say this might be my most tenuous connection yet, because the Olmecs existed from around 1500 BC to around 400 BC. So 910 is just sort of in the middle there. But
that's worse than my one.
That is
so much worse. How could you be giving him such abuse?
Because there are reasons for 910.
Okay. Okay.
And I'll get to them. But I just wanted to give people the range so you don't think they just existed in 900.
We'll keep the guillotine on its peg for a bit.
Yeah. In fact, they sound... Oh, no, never mind. They're not contemporaneous with Sparta. They started earlier and ended earlier.
Oh, they overlap.
Yeah, they overlap. In 910, for instance.
Yeah.
So for some background, the Olmecs are thought to be the first Mesoamerican civilization, evolving out of early farming cultures. They're centered in what is now Mexico, on the Gulf of Mexico side, which is lovely, just sort of to the west of the Yucatan
What
Peninsula.
A time to invest in property back in 910.
Oh my God, are you kidding me?
If you had some money back then, yeah.
Buy. They're considered one of six cradles of civilization worldwide, along with things like, you know, the Rift Valley and whatever.
Norwich,
yep. From which all life emerges and to which all life will return. We do know a lot of things about the Olmecs, but far less than we know about, like, the Mayans or the Aztecs who came later. But over the years, archaeologists and historians have credited the Olmecs with many firsts, most of which are tenuous at best.
Combustion engine.
Including the first combustion engine. including bloodletting.
Okay.
The concept of zero. Uh-huh. Maybe human sacrifice. Possibly writing. Perhaps the compass.
Oh, okay.
And definitely popcorn.
What?
Yeah. Which, as far as civilizations go, it's pretty good. I like a lot of those things.
I mean, it makes sense. Like, before popcorn, they had zero popcorn, so they had to invent zero.
Yeah,
first.
They had to say, from nothingness came popcorn.
I think those things actually comprise a full civilization. Like, you don't need any more things.
Yeah.
No, I think that's everything.
Now, the reason I'm grabbing the most precarious, slippery foothold on 910 BCE is that right around this time, the civilization was transitioning from its called formation stage to its integration stage. And it's when they abandoned San Lorenzo, which had been their civilizational center, and moved to La Venta, which is closer to the coast.
Hmm.
And so this is kind of a transition to a more advanced, a more settled civilization. And that's when they really start to build up the things that make them known. And so that's why I think it satisfies the requirements. As soon as they move to La Venta, this is when things really kick off for them. They build a great pyramid, which kind of was like just a big pile of dirt, but it still stands today.
Okay, well, that's still impressive. That is huge, yeah.
They made these opulent offerings with jade and pottery and figurines and mosaics and all the little trinkets that you just skip over in museums. They oriented some of their monuments around the North Star. They had some concept of astronomy. Yep. Or they were just really lucky. We don't know too much about their pantheon or their religion, but they did really love were-jaguars, as in
half-man, half-jaguar.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Oh, sorry. Can you guys say that word?
Were-jaguar.
Jaguar. That's what I was looking for. It's just so much better. Some people think the were-jaguar was the god of rain, which historians then dubbed rain baby. I don't know why. I guess it was a baby were-jaguar. But yes.
Well, I'm half man, half jaguar.
You're half man, half jaguar.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Which half?
Top half of a man.
Uh-huh.
Bottom half also of a man.
Heart of a jaguar.
Appetite of a jaguar.
Also spots of a jaguar.
Spots, yeah, that is.
All those scabs. Okay, now I know what you're thinking. What did they eat?
Popcorn, obviously.
Obviously popcorn. I'm here to tell you some other things. How does snook sound?
Confusing.
Snook.
Can I interest you in a mohara or tarpon? No?
Snook was the evil Sith Lord in the sequels to Star Wars.
Yeah. That, well, they ate him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No, those are all fish.
Oh, I have heard of snook fish. Yeah.
And catfish.
Yeah.
Turtles. And dogs.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Delicious.
But the thing the Olmecs are really known for are these colossal heads. And colossal is not an exaggeration. They varied in height from 1.5 to 3.5 meters tall.
That's pretty big.
They weighed between 6 and 50 tons.
Wow.
So huge stone heads. 17 of them have been unearthed in Olmec territory. And that, like, it does what it says on the tin. They are stone heads. They're not heads that fell off of bodies. They were, the monument itself
just
was
head.
The heads. And they, all the heads have very similar facial features and expressions. And the consensus is that these were the rulers of the Olmecs. Although for a while there was a theory that they were ball players, because there's this, the Mesoamerican ball game, which is like where they have these incredibly thick rubber balls that they throw at the wall and at each other.
Is that the one of the ring
yes,
in the wall?
The yeah, exactly. So the Olmecs maybe invented that, maybe didn't. Maybe the Stoneheads are ball players. Maybe they were kings. A lot of speculation.
Not very collectible, are they?
They're not very collectible. Yeah. They take up a lot of space in a sculpture garden.
Not going to put them in a ring binder. Yeah.
I would be amazed at that ring binder. The heads have been dated from 1000 BC to 600 BC, but the ones at San Lorenzo were buried around 900, so when the civilization is moving. So again, another mark for 910.
So who dated the heads?
There's lady heads.
Okay.
Yeah, the were jaguars. They're constructed out of, I'm realizing now I've never actually said this rock out loud,
Bath salts,
which is a volcanic rock, of course. And for some of the heads, at least, the Olmecs very smartly went to areas where there were volcanic mudslides that basically delivered the stone down the mountain to them,
great.
So they didn't have to bother.
So they just
quarrying.
Found some head-shaped stones,
big round head, big round stones,
a little bit here and there,
and then they moved them back to their cities. Sometimes like 150 kilometers.
Wow.
And one thing they definitely didn't invent was the wheel. So they're just sort of pushing, I guess, and pulling.
Like log rollers or
yeah,
something?
Yeah, yeah. And maybe they think maybe like river transport, they'd float it along.
Probably slaves of some sort.
Yeah, I don't know actually what the slave class was like. I didn't get into that. Anyway, one fun story about the heads is that in January 2009, two Mexicans and one American, who are all members of this particular evangelical church/cult, went into a museum and threw salt, grape juice, and oil on the heads as a supposed pre-Columbian ritual to bring about peace and world healing.
Oh, did it work?
I think so. Since January 2009, can you think of anything that hasn't been peaceful?
Nope.
So, nailed it. And yeah, that is just an incredibly brief overview of a civilization that lasted an entire millennium and about which we will probably never say another word on this podcast.
yeah, for sure.
But good job, amazing. Olmecs. Love those big giant
thank
heads.
You for the world peace.
Yeah, thank you for the world peace to those people.
Fascinating stuff.
It's wonderful. I had no idea that people there were building such enormous heads.
Yeah.
Me neither.
Yeah. They really couldn't be larger. Can you imagine one in the room we're in right now?
Well,
it would be...
Because here it is!
Oh, it's been here the whole time!
Oh, yeah. It really blends in.
In retrospect, I really should have noticed.
I mean, it is a large cavern that we record this in.
That's true, yeah.
Did you bring this on the train?
I did, yeah. I got in quite a bit of trouble with the Thames Link people. Oh, no, that's personal data now. People...
We'll beep that out. Thanks for joining us. That's everything you'd ever need to know about the year 910 BCE.
I can't wait until we get 909 BCE and we can just continue all of the wonderful stuff we've talked about here. Ant's going to have to read a whole other book of the Bible.
Yeah, it's going to be crazy.
Now, Ant is doing an internship at the moment as the RNG custodian.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There is a BTEC, a GCSE, and then an undergraduate foundation course that he's been doing.
Yeah, you've done really well.
Thank you. It's been 17 years of my life.
Yeah. But it's worth it. I have to say also the robes look really fetching on you.
Thank you.
It's
thank
a great
you very
shade
much.
Of I mean mauve.
They're hand-me-downs, so I'll grow into them.
Yeah.
I'll grow into them.
Are you ready to boot it up?
I'm really nervous about this, but yes, I'm going to boot up the random number generator.
You can do it.
Is this right? Let me just toggle this. Pulleys are active. Lights are green. Good. Okay, so the next year that we will be doing is 1881.
Oh,
that's okay. That's pretty good.
Oh, you've
that's
nailed
pretty good.
It.
I think I've done it right.
You've shepherded it to a great year.
Yeah, we have gone out of the doldrums of 1910 BCE.
Yeah.
Oh, there's going to be lots of history there.
1881,
this is great.
Is that our first palindrome?
Yes.
Great.
Must be, yeah. How many palindromes are there between minus 1,000 plus 2,000? That's a question for our audience.
Seven.
I don't know that's true.
No,
I'm sure it's way more than that.
Okay, well, we'll have an answer for you next week on that.
And maybe we'll also have some history.
Yeah, thanks. Right. Okay,
my hands
see you
are
next
burning.
Time.
I shouldn't have touched it so much.
Also, tell your friends about the podcast. Okay, bye.
Okay, bye.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Your personal info, like addresses, phone numbers, and more, are collected and sold by data brokers. But Aura steps in, scanning the web, sending you alerts, and requesting your info be removed. Get Aura's full toolkit, including credit and transaction monitoring, a password manager, VPN, and more. Get a 14-day free trial at aura.com/safety. That's aura.com/safety.